These days, scientists know a great deal about what kind of dinosaurs once roamed the Earth and when they did so. What they don't know so well is how the dinosaurs lived. In other words, what were their life histories? That's changing thanks to new evidence revealed this week. It amounts to the first population survey of the lives of tyrannosaurs, easily the best-known family of meat-eating dinosaurs. The results of that survey reveal that tyrannosaurs enjoyed a relatively easy youth, followed by a much tougher midlife. To find out more, New Scientist spoke with Greg Erickson. He's lead author of the new study and a paleobiologist at Florida State University. Hi, Dr. Erickson.
Hi, Ivan. How are you?
I'm well. Now, if I were asked to sketch out a stereotypical human life history in the 21st century, I suppose I'd come up with something like, you're born, you spend your early years with other kids, you go to school, maybe you go to university, then a job, then you get married, then you have kids, and then maybe you're 30 or 40 by then, and so on and so on. Why is it so difficult to unfold that same story for the life of a typical dinosaur?
Well, it's a lot to ask of a paleontologist to describe the life history of an animal just based on bones, often partial remains. One of the problems we have is a lot of our dinosaurs are only represented by several individuals, for instance, so we can say very little about their population biology without more to work with.
So population is key, and certainly that's how you're starting to get at this problem, no doubt a tall order. And you've got some new work that you've published this week with new evidence. Can you describe what and where that evidence is coming from?
Well, what we've done is we've taken several population samples of various species of tyrannosaurs, and this includes Tyrannosaurus rex as well as three of its close relatives that lived earlier in time. And what we've done is we've sampled different individuals from populations, and we're able to figure out the age structure of these aggregations of these animals. And in one case, for our sample for Albertosaurus, it was what we call a bone bed situation, where we had 22 of these animals that perished at approximately the same time that were clearly part of a single population. In the case of Tyrannosaurus rex and several of the other species, we sampled individuals through formations, and that essentially gave us an idea of what an average population would have looked like for those animals.
Right, and I'm just curious about that bone bed situation. How do you have a large group of tyrannosaurs all together suddenly perishing and finding all of their bones in the same place?
Well, it's hard to say what happened in this particular situation. It's clearly what we call an attritional assemblage. In other words, these animals died over an extended period of time. That could have been several weeks, maybe even over several months. It looks like it may have been a drought situation that drew these animals together. In any event, the weaker members of this herd perished and, basically contributed their bodies to science.
Well, you know, it's really evocative just trying to think of that graveyard of the tyrannosaurs. So what is that approach telling you, the approach of looking at that snapshot of an entire population?
Well, what this research is telling us is basically how these animals what times in their lives these animals succumbed, essentially. And what we're finding is that during the first year or so, these animals had extremely high mortality rates, which is very common in wild populations. When you have hatchlings or any kind of neonate animals, there's a lot of attrition, particularly due to disease and also predation. Then about 2 years of age into these animals' lives, they basically showed a period where they had very low attrition. So they reached threshold sizes where they were no longer being killed, probably by predation. And those really high survivorship rates were maintained all the way up to the point where they reached adult size, and all of a sudden their mortality rates increased precipitously in midlife. It was a true midlife crisis, so to speak, and mortality rates rose to 15 to 25% per year after that. So very few individuals actually had long reproductive lifespans, so the ones that actually contributed their genes to the future populations were actually a very small percentage of one of these herds.
I see. So, you know, if we now go back to that initial question and try to sketch out the typical life of a typical tyrannosaur, sounds like, you know, there's a very scary period at the beginning where it's touch and go, a lot of mortality for the very young ones. Then after 2 years, I guess, as you say, by the time they're large enough to not be threatened so much by predators or other, I don't know what would be going after a tyrannosaur, but I guess once they're big enough, nothing does, and that's the point. And then they have a kind of a nice run until they start to succumb. And what is finally knocking them off in midlife? Why do they suddenly start to disappear again?
Well, this is a pattern that we've seen before when we look at living populations. And in some species, when they reach sexual maturity, their mortality rates increase precipitously. And it's associated with basically coming into the, becoming members of the breeding population. I think that love was a dangerous game with these animals. And what was happening is that they probably were combating one another as they fought over mates or territory. Certainly the females would have been subjected to some adverse times in the sense that they're trying to convert resources or get enough resources to essentially make young. And also in closely related carnivorous dinosaurs, close relatives of tyrannosaurs, we see brooding behavior. So these animals actually would protect their nests, which suggests that during the breeding season they actually had periods of fasting, potentially when they, obviously had less resources to work with. So I think one or all of those factors may have contributed to the increased attrition that we see in these animals right when they would seem to be in their physiological prime.
It's amazing. So it almost feels like there are two bottlenecks here. You know, one is an infancy, the other is reproduction. If you can get through those two bottlenecks, the prize is you get to pass on your DNA and to the succeeding generations. How does that compare to other what we see in the wild? I mean, is this similar to other life forms on Earth today or at other times in Earth's history?
Well, the pattern that we're seeing in tyrannosaurs is not uncommon for long-lived birds, which are actually living dinosaurs, and also large mammals such as elephants. They show very similar patterns to this. It's very much unlike what we see in crocodilians, which are close relatives of dinosaurs. Crocodiles show really high mortality, basically from hatchling, and that continues for years because these animals grow so slowly and are subjected to predatory pressures through almost their entire lives up to the point where they reach adult size. What happens is not only are they preyed upon when they're small by other species, they're actually fed upon by one another. These crocodilians are very cannibalistic. It's also very much unlike what we see in humans. We have extremely low mortality rates as juveniles because we have access to medical attention and obviously protection. There's no predation pressure on humans. And the only thing that really increases our mortality is old age. So we have a very different pattern that we're seeing here.
Now, one thing I find interesting about this is it really shows the increasing sophistication of the kind of information that paleobiologists like yourself are gleaning out of the fossil record. It's not just about anatomy or physiology anymore. When you're looking at these remains, you're really asking the question, what did these animals do? How did they live? Do you think, in fact, that's where the science is going? And in your view, how far do you think can it go towards showing us or allowing us to understand what life was really like for the dinosaurs?
How far can we carry this? Who knows? I mean, I never thought we would get to the point where we'd be talking about survivorship patterns in these animals or quantified growth rates. But the field has really undergone a revolution in the last decade or so. I would say this is the golden age of dinosaur paleontology. And the reason it is that you're seeing people that are coming into the field that are bringing in skills from physiology and engineering as well as traditional geological training, et cetera, and looking at these animals in a very different manner. It's just really opening a whole new world for us.
Well, you certainly make it sound very exciting, and it's been a very vivid journey back in time as well. Thanks, Dr. Erickson.
Thanks, Ivan. I enjoyed speaking with you.
Dr. Greg Erickson spoke to us from Florida State University in Tallahassee. His findings on the life histories of tyrannosaurs were published this week in the journal Science. For New Scientist, I'm Ivan Semenek.